This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neal Conan is out today. Today is the first day of enrollment for the new Medicare drug plan aimed at helping the nation's 43 million seniors pay for medications. The plan could be a big help to those who don't already have prescription drug insurance. But the plan is complicated, and some seniors are already saying it is too hard to wade through all the options. Those who do have drug benefits have to figure out if it's worth it to switch, and everyone has to choose from one of dozens of different plans offered by health insurance companies under contract to the federal government. The benefits vary quite a bit. There are different premiums, deductibles, and co-payments. Different plans cover different drugs. Seniors may find their local pharmacies don't participate in networks that offer the best plan for them. Those who do want to participate in the Medicare drug plan have to sort through all of the options and decide by May 15th in order to avoid a penalty on their premiums. Later in this program, we'll hear details of a new report on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and its former chairman, Kenneth Tomlinson. But first, the Medicare drug plan. What questions do you have about it? Are you considering joining? And how are you going to go about it? And if not, why not? Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And our first guest is Michael Levitt. He is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and he joins us from a phone in the Medicare bus in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Levitt.
Oh, thank you. I'm pleased to be on your program.
Perhaps you can explain to us what you're doing there in that Medicare bus. I guess you're trying to enroll people in the Medicare plan today. How are people receiving it?
For the last nearly a year, we have been going around the country preparing for this day. So obviously, we're pleased that today has come and that people can now begin to enroll. This is among the most significant changes that will have occurred in health care in some 40 years. For the first time, people will have prescription drug coverage as part of Medicare.
Now, I know the government has been spending a lot of money on workshops and drives to educate people about this plan, but we still keep hearing about a lot of confusion among seniors who are attending these workshops and are trying to learn about it. And I guess just when I've been reading these reports and hearing it, my question, I think a lot of people's question is, why is it so complicated in the first place?
I think when seniors actually get down to the business of enrolling, they'll find that it's not as complicated as they fear it is. There are decisions that need to be made, and it isn't without complication because it's health care. Health care is complicated. There are a lot of things in our lives that require us to work through things, registering our car, doing our tax return, signing up for cable TV. All of those take some effort to learn. People who are actually signing up find that it takes between 20 and 30 minutes once they have their information in place. I've been working with my parents, for example, getting ready to enroll them, and it will be able to accomplish it in well under an hour.
Have you used the Medicare Plan Finder website in order to help your parents? Have you gone in there and tried to use it?
I have, actually, and I found it very helpful. Once a person has the medications that they take, they simply put them on the plan finder and put their zip code, and it will provide them with a list of the plans that are available. Now, of course, not everyone likes to use the internet, and so they can call 1-800-MEDICARE in order to get the same service, or they could ask someone at a pharmacy or a doctor's office or a senior center to help them. We're working hard to make certain that every senior has the help that they need to make this important decision.
I have to just say, because I've just been hearing so many stories on this and so many voices, so many people. The other night I heard one man say, you know, I'm a college graduate. I'm an engineer. I'm used to dealing with complicated things, and I just don't understand this. So clearly some people are having trouble with it.
Well, we need to work at making it more and more streamlined. We'll get better as we go, and I think people will come to understand it. It is, having been through it myself, I know that it does have complications because it's health care, and that's just the way health care is. But we're working hard to get people enrolled. The good news is they'll have prescription drug coverage when they're finished. It will benefit everyone who signs up by, on average, about $1,300. So if it takes an hour and they're able to work through it, they're rewarded with a $1,300 a year benefit that they wouldn't have had before. So we're optimistic that people will see the virtue of this. It not only saves them money, but it'll help them stay healthy. They'll have prescription drugs to prevent illness as opposed to just treating it after they're sick. And that's a big change in the way we think about health care.
Are there some people that shouldn't participate in the plan that aren't going to, it wouldn't help them if they have a health care plan already, for instance?
I know it sounds like a sweeping generalization, but I have yet to find anyone who isn't benefited by being part of this plan. A third of Americans will get the plan with zero output of their own because the federal government will pay for all of it. If they're in an income bracket below, say, $20,000 a year for a family and about $14,000 for an individual, the federal government pays for all of it. If they are in an income bracket above that, they will have to pay a small premium. But in every state, there is a plan under $20 a month. It will save them a lot of money, and it will give them the peace of mind of knowing that they're never going to have to worry about losing their savings because of prescription drugs.
The target is to get 30 million people enrolled by 2006. What if you fall short of that target? What if people just say, I can't wade my way through this, I don't get it? What does that mean? What would that mean for people? What would that mean?
Well, it means we need to keep working because this is a good benefit. It's an important change in the way we think about health care. I feel confident that we'll get to 28 to 30 million. Many people currently have a prescription drug program with their retirement. They may have worked for the government or for the, they might be a veteran of the Defense Department or work for a union or something, and they have a benefit already. We're encouraging them to keep that plan if it's as good as or better than Medicare. Medicare is actually going to write a check to their plan so that their plan will continue to offer it. We're going to take the money that we would have spent to help them have an individual benefit to have a continuation of their group benefit. And we know that there will be, we expect there will be several million people who will join the prescription drug program through that mechanism.
Just one other thing. I know that the government is saying that there are a large number of insurance companies competing because that way prices can be held down. But couldn't there have been a way to keep the number a little lower than, let's say, 40 different insurance companies, 40 different plans in some states? I mean, that's where it's really hard for people to wade through it and figure out what's the best thing for them to do.
That was a little bit of a surprise. In fact, a year ago, people were saying, oh, this isn't going to work because no insurance companies are going to want to do this. But now we ended up having lots of people. And the good news is it's driving the prices down. It is working. The government actuaries originally estimated that it would be about $37 a month on average for a person who did not get extra help. And it's turned out to be substantially lower than that, and billions of dollars are being saved as a result of the fact that these plans are aggressively competing for the business of seniors. Now, over time, I suspect that all those who start out won't continue and that it'll get a little more simple, but there will always be a competition to earn the business of seniors, and that means the plans will continue to innovate and have the lowest possible prices.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us, Mr. Leavitt.
Thank you.
Michael Leavitt is the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, and he joined us by phone from the Medicare bus in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And joining us now to discuss the new plan is Julie Rovner, NPR's health policy correspondent. So good to have you with us again, Julie.
Nice to be here.
Okay, first of all, maybe you can answer the question, why is it so complicated in the first place?
It's mostly so complicated in the first place, and it's far more complicated than the rest of the Medicare program because there were basically 15 people who sat down in a room and tried to compromise until they could come up with the program. That's how this was designed by the people in Congress who wrote it. And they had some limitations. They needed the support of the drug industry, and they needed the support of at least all of the Republicans. As it turned out, not too many Democrats voted for this. They wanted very much for this not to be a benefit delivered through Medicare, but one delivered by the private sector. They want this to be a model for perhaps the rest of Medicare, because as everyone knows, Medicare is financially not really sustainable for the retirement of the baby boomers. So, and again, as the Secretary said, at first it was expected there wouldn't be very many insurers that stepped forward. What we've had, of course, is many. They're not all insurance companies, by the way. Some of them are pharmacy groups of pharmacists, group pharmacy benefits companies. Mm-hmm. And actually what we have are not so much so many companies. I think in most of the regions of the country, it's more like 20 companies or 15, but they're all offering three different variations of plan.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, is this as much a political document as it is a prescription drug plan?
Well, the way it was designed, I think, was a political document, that they definitely wanted this not to be something that the government actually set the prices for drugs. That was something the drug industry was vehemently opposed to and the president was vehemently opposed to. In fact, there is an explicit requirement in the law that Medicare not be allowed to negotiate prices of drugs, that they want to let the private market competition do that for them.
Okay. And for a while, as Mr. Levitt was just saying, we are hearing now that in some states there are as many as 40 different options to choose from.
50 in some.
And at one time it was thought, he was saying that there wouldn't be enough insurance companies getting involved. What happened?
From the consultants and business people that I've talked to, I think a lot of the concern is that this is a big market. Seniors use a lot of prescription drugs. On the one hand, they're afraid that if only the sick people get into these plans, that they're going to lose money because it's supposed to be an insurance product. But that the companies were afraid that if they didn't get in, that their competitors would get a leg up on them, that if this works later, they sort of can't afford not to try it. And of course, the feeling, and this is also a concern, as the secretary alluded to, not all of them probably will make money. Some of them probably will drop out. In fact, some of the ones that aren't charging very much won't make money, and they'll drop out, and then people will suddenly have to switch plans.
Say, what happens with people that enroll in those programs then?
A lot of churning, which we saw in the late 1990s with some of the private Medicare health maintenance organizations. And I haven't even mentioned those with the choices. It's not only the choice of these standalone drug plans, but now the government has very much increase the payments to these private HMOs who will also be offering drug coverage. So, in fact, in many of these places, they'll not only really have 40 or 50 choices of drug plan, but sometimes 70 or 80 different choices between the managed care organizations and the plans.
We are talking about the new Medicare prescription drug plan, which seniors may begin signing up for today. Julie Rovner will stay with us and will be taking your calls. The number is 800-989-TALK. You can also send us an email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Starting today, seniors eligible for Medicare can enroll in the new Medicare prescription drug plan. We're talking about the new plan and why some seniors are saying it's difficult to make sense of all that's being offered. Our guest is Julie Rovner, NPR's health policy reporter. She's with us here in Studio 3A, and you're invited to join our discussion. If you have a question about how the plan works, give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's take a call now from Nancy, and she is calling from, I believe it's Novelty, Ohio. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. My question is any senior eligible for this program regardless of their income?
Yes. In fact, this is kind of a common misconception. What's a little bit confusing about it is that there's really sort of three levels of coverage depending on your income. If you are the very poorest of the poor, what we call the dual eligibles, the people who are on both Medicare and Medicaid, they'll be automatically switched over to a Medicare plan starting in January, and that's a whole different subject that we should probably leave till later. People with incomes too high to qualify for Medicaid but still below about 150% of the poverty line will get what they call special help, and they'll get have lower premiums, lower copays, no deductible. And then people who are above that threshold will pay the rates that we've been talking about here, the premiums and deductibles and copayments. So everybody is eligible. Depending on your income, you can get special assistance.
Does that answer your question, Nancy?
Yes. It's confusing because on one of the applications I was reading for my mother, after reading what I read, I thought I should just throw it away, that she was not eligible, that if you made a certain amount of income, you could not apply.
I think what happened was earlier this summer, the Social Security Administration sent out several million applications for people to apply. You have to apply for the special help separately from choosing a plan. So, in fact, if your mother has too much income or too many assets to qualify for the special help, she can still sign up for a regular plan. The point was that that's a two-step process. You sign up for the special help, and then you pick a plan.
But if her mother already has good health insurance, is there any point in doing this?
No, if she has good insurance for drugs.
For drugs, I mean.
Probably not. It depends. The complication with that is that some of the insurance that's being offered now may not be offered in the wake of this Part D benefit, as they're calling it. So people are supposed to be notified. If they have retiree coverage, they'll be notified. If they have Medigap drug coverage, they'll be notified. And depending on what your plan tells you about what its plans are, you may or may not want to sign up.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Nancy.
Thank you.
And here's an email from Hawaii. Aloha. As a person knowledgeable about health policy and a medical care provider, I have serious concerns about the Medicare drug plan. One question I have not heard addressed is this. What happens when someone enrolls in a particular plan because it covers the medications they need, but is then prescribed a medication not covered? I believe this will happen a lot, and I hope one of your guests can address this. Julie?
This is certainly a possibility. The plans are allowed to change the drugs that they offer. Beneficiaries can change once between now and the middle of May, and after that they'll have to wait until the next open enrollment period, which will be next November 15th. So if sometime in June the person is prescribed a new plan, or perhaps their plan just stops offering that drug, they're going to have to pay for it.
Maybe you can explain also what is meant by the donut. There's a period of time. I'm not even going to bother trying to get into it. You explain it, Julie.
Okay. This really is a political creature that was developed because Congress didn't have as much money as they wanted to do this benefit. They really wanted to get people to join the program, so they wanted to give a fairly rich benefit at the bottom where most people's average drug costs were, and they really wanted to help people with very high drug costs, which is the catastrophic benefit. What they discovered is that if they did both of those things, they were going to have a gap in the middle, and that's what they've left. So this is what's called the standard benefit, which you pay a $250 deductible. You get 75% of your drug costs covered until you get up to $2,250. Then if you go on to spend $3,600 of your own money, so that's the $250 plus the 25% plus your own money, you basically get to $5,100 worth of drugs. Then the plan kicks back in and it pays 95% of the rest of your drugs. Now, I see you rolling your eyes. What's even worse is that many of the plans, in fact, I believe most of the plans that are being offered, don't have that standard benefit. There was a rule that they could offer anything they wanted as long as it was quote-unquote actuarially equivalent to that standard benefit. So a lot of them have lower deductibles and or higher premiums, different copays. They have some coverage in what we call that gap, the donut hole. Sometimes they just have coverage for generic drugs in the donut hole. Sometimes they have full coverage in the donut hole. So it's really the landscape, I think, is much different than people anticipated.
But wait, do all those plans have a donut hole? That is a period of time where people are going to be paying out of their own pocket?
They don't.
No, they don't. So how would a person find out that they were in a plan that has that, and how would a person find out that they're in a plan that doesn't have
the plans
that?
Actually say, in fact, I think there's a, if you look on the website, the way it's structured is there's a chart, or you know, one line in the chart that says coverage in the gap, and it will say what kind of coverage, if there is any, and what kind there is. So no, they don't all have donut holes.
And the other thing that I've learned about this program, I think from your reporting, as a matter of fact, Julie, that's difficult for people is they may go through this process, go into the website, do the research, make phone calls, come up with a drug plan that they say, this is the one that works for me, and then they go to their pharmacy, and the pharmacy doesn't use that drug plan.
Well, that's one of the things that you can check. You can check that on the website. In fact, a lot of people, a lot of seniors I've seen are starting with that. They're starting with the pharmacy and moving backwards.
Uh-huh.
And I think if you live in a rural area where, or you have a pharmacist that you particularly trust, that might make sense. So you start with the pharmacy and then you say, which of these plans does my pharmacy participate in? So you can, if you want, you can do it that way.
And if your pharmacy is in a plan that doesn't cover your drugs, you're just out of luck.
Yes.
Okay. But we
either have to change pharmacy or change drugs.
We should say on the other side of that, that perhaps without this plan, those seniors wouldn't be getting any coverage at all.
Absolutely. And adding another element of complication to this, there are plans that may not cover, most seniors take more than one drug. It may not cover one of your drugs, but it may still be the best plan for you because you may end up saving so much money on the other drugs that paying for the drug it doesn't cover out of pocket still gives you a net saving.
All right. We're talking with NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner about the new Medicare prescription drug plan. And joining us now is Tricia Newman. She is the vice president at Kaiser Family Foundation and director of their Medicare policy project. And she joins us now in Studio 3A.
Hello. Thank you.
Good to have you. And I know that the Kaiser Family Foundation has done studies on how seniors are feeling about this plan, this program. Give us a sense of what you've learned.
I think we've learned that seniors are more and more aware of the Medicare drug benefit, but they really lack a fundamental understanding of what it means for them personally. They seem to know that the Medicare drug benefit's coming, but it doesn't seem that seniors have done the nitty-gritty work of trying to understand how they're going to be helped, whether they should sign up, which plan to sign up for. And it would appear that now they are approaching these decisions with a little bit of trepidation now that they hear so many plans are going to be offered in their areas.
So if someone is out there thinking, should I or shouldn't I enroll in this, how do they begin to make that decision? How do they begin working on it?
Well, that is exactly the right first question to ask. Should I sign up or not? And that might depend on whether or not you have another source of coverage. People who have employer coverage or veterans, another source of coverage that is considered at least as good as the standard Medicare drug benefit, might well want to stick with what they have. But most people on Medicare do not have that kind of coverage, and that's a group of people who should think long and hard about signing up, and there are strong reasons to sign up. There's kind of a carrot and a stick. The carrot is they do get insurance. If they're low income, they get fairly substantial help, and anyone gets help just at the idea of the notion of having insurance. But there's also the stick, which is if they don't have other coverage, they will pay a penalty for late enrollment, and it's a penalty that they would pay if they change their mind and sign up in the future, and it's one that they'd pay for the rest of their lives on Medicare.
How much of a penalty are we talking about?
It's 1% for every month they delay enrollment based on the average premium in the year that they sign up. And in the first year or two, that might not be a lot of money, but over time, it could really add up.
You mean delay enrollment based on what? Based on their age or the age that they were eligible for?
A very classic situation could be a person who's healthy who says, geez, this all sounds pretty complicated. I'm not sure I need to sign up for this. I'll see what my friends say in a couple of years. And then suddenly something happens. They get sick. They need insurance maybe in a few years from now, and then they want to sign up. And when they do, they, of course, can enroll in a plan, but they will pay more in premiums than other people do because they've delayed, and that's the late enrollment penalty.
Yeah. How different is that from other insurance policies where, let's say, you sign up at the age of 50, but then one person signs up at the age of 50, another person signs up at the age of 55, and the person that signs up at 55 is going to pay more.
Yeah, it's a little bit different because it's not based on your age. And the idea of this penalty is to, from an insurance point of view, you want healthy people and sick people to sign up in the beginning. You don't want people coming in who are just sick because that will drive up premiums and average costs. And this is also the way the Part B part of Medicare, the part that pays for physician services, works.
All right, we are talking about the new Medicare prescription drug plan with NPR health policy correspondent Julie Rovner and Tricia Newman of the Kaiser Family Foundation. So let's take some calls now from, first of all, Larry in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Larry.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I had one question, now I've got two. Let's start with the second question first. Is this late enrollment, in listening to the previous speakers, indications are that if you have an existing government plan, and let's say in the future they decide to discontinue that plan because of, what was it, Part D, I think it was, would you be deemed to be a late enrollee then, through no fault of your own?
No, you would not. As long as you had less than 63 days in a gap in coverage. If your employer drops your coverage, or for some reason you lose your health plan, if you sign up for a Medicare drug plan within 63 days, you will not face a penalty for late enrollment.
And that's true. That's true of Part B as well. Same thing. There's also a late enrollment penalty, as Tricia pointed out, for enrolling late in Part B when you become eligible. If you don't enroll in it when you're first eligible, but for instance, if you're still working when you turn 65 and you still have your employer's coverage, you don't sign up for Part B, then a couple of years later, if you retire at age 69 or 70, there's no late enrollment penalty there. If you've had creditable coverage up until then, there's no late enrollment penalty.
And the first question I started to call on was, thank God, both my wife and myself have just recently turned 65, aren't taking any medication. So any plan we look at, we're guessing as to what future illness we're going to have. Is that correct?
That's right.
Is this Medicare Medicare roulette?
Well, no. I mean, luckily, actually, one of the things that's happened is that there have been some very, very inexpensive plans. Depending on where you live in the middle of the country, there's a plan that costs $1.87 a month. And
but
if you
I don't live in the middle of the country.
Okay, but that same plan is actually offered nationwide, and I think
I'm there and then move to where I want to be.
Probably. That's up to you. But there are some very inexpensive plans, and if you're healthy, it's probably not a bad idea to sign up for one of the inexpensive plans. You can always switch every year. You won't pay the late enrollment penalty. And remember, this is insurance. It's not just about people trying to get covered for the drugs they're taking now. As the person from Hawaii pointed out, you may get prescribed a drug, you know, in two or three years.
That seems to be the pitch.
I'm sorry?
I said that seems to be the pitch.
Well, it is insurance.
No, I mean, the pitch appears to be is go through and select the drug you have now that you're using now and save all this money.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. That's part of it. But it's also, I mean, one shouldn't look past the fact that this is also insurance, so that just matching the drugs you take now to what the plan pays may not actually end up being the best thing for you.
All right. Thanks so much for your
country. You're saying there's plans for $1.19?
No, $1.87. That's just in the middle of the country. But it's a plan that costs, it's under $10, I think, around the country, under $10 a month.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your answering my questions. Thank you.
All right. Sure. Thanks so much for your call, Larry. Tricia, did you want to add something?
I just wanted to say there's sort of a good news, bad news story here. The good news and the bad news is this is a decision that you can make each year, and many people may need to make this decision each year. So if this is a year when you are healthy and you want to choose a relatively low premium plan because you don't have high drug costs, you might want to take that approach. And if your situation should change over the course of the year, you may need to choose a different plan for the following year.
Okay. Tricia Newman is vice president at Kaiser Family Foundation, and she's the director of their Medicare Policy Project. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to John, and John is in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, John. Hello, John.
Hi,
go ahead.
I have a question that I can find not on the website of Medicare, nor in any other literature, nor in the booklet that Medicare sent out. Say I sign up for a plan, and I think the whole thing is not of value. How do I opt out so that I don't have the premiums that I signed up for taken or subtracted from my bank account or my Social Security each month? I find nothing about opting out in any of the literature.
Tricia?
That's a very good question. I think the answer is you have the option to disenroll. There's nothing that requires you to continue to pay premiums. You would need to contact your plan and inform them that you plan, that your intention is to disenroll.
You don't contact Medicare.
I think you would contact the plan directly. That would probably be the best way to do it.
Because none of the Medicare literature or even AARP literature or anything says anything about this.
Well, I think that, you know, the issue here is if you do decide to disenroll, you will have a period where you will be without coverage. And the concern there is that then you could find yourself having a gap in coverage and face the penalty for late enrollment. So the materials that are put out by the government are probably not trying to encourage people to take that approach.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, John. Tricia, I wanted to ask you about people going to the Medicare website to get information. Now, I understand you tested it yourself, the Plan Finder feature. Tell us about your own experience with it and how easy was it to use and to navigate?
Well, I am a frequent user of this relatively new website, and I've had a mixed experience. They have made a number of changes to the website since I first started looking at it. They have now added a feature where after you add all of an individual's prescriptions, you can compare plans by their expected annual out-of-pocket costs, and that's fairly helpful for getting an array of expected expenditures across the plans that are offered in the area. But it's I think it's fair to say that it's a fairly labor-intensive process, and it takes some getting used to. There are really two websites a good consumer would go to. One is the Plan Finder, which lists the drugs by costs. And then the other one is the Formulary Finder, where you get some of the nitty-gritty important pieces of information, like what tier, what the copays are going to be, and whether there are restrictions on use, like limits, quantity limits, prior authorization rules that can make it hard to fill your prescriptions.
We're going to continue this discussion after a short break. If you have any questions about the new Medicare prescription drug plan, give us a call at 800-989-8255. I'm Lynn Neary. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we are talking about the new prescription drug plan and the Medicare prescription drug plan and how it affects which seniors eligible for Medicare can start signing up for it today. Our guests are NPR's health policy reporter Julie Rovner and Tricia Newman. She's vice president of the Kaiser Family Foundation and director of their Medicare Policy Project. If you've got any questions, the number 1-800-989-8255. Julie, I have an email here from Cynthia, and she asks, could your guest discuss the prescription drug plan and how it relates to those disabled people who are on Medicare but are not seniors?
Yes, everyone is eligible for this on Medicare, including those 6.5 million Medicare beneficiaries who are not seniors but are disabled. They're always sort of left out. People talk about Medicare as being the program for seniors, but in fact, if you have Social Security disability and you wait a period of time, you do get on Medicare, and those people are indeed eligible for this. I think the emailer might ask because there have been programs in the past, private programs for Medicare, where the disabled were not allowed to enroll. That is not the case this time.
All right, let's see if we can take a call from John. And John is calling from Tucson, Arizona. A lot of callers from Arizona here today, I notice.
Hello.
Hi, John. Go ahead.
My wife has Medigap insurance. It runs about $300 a month. But she has no out-of-pocket medical expenses. I'm not speaking of drugs now, but just hospitals and doctors. Will she be able to keep that Medigap coverage?
Julie?
Oh. Yes. The short answer is yes, she can. She may or may not want to. You didn't say whether there's only two Medigap plans that actually offer drug coverage, and the rules on those are a little bit complicated. Go ahead.
She's with United American.
I know, but it depends. The plans go by letters. Plan J, for instance, offers drugs. Do you know what letter coverage she has?
No, I don't. Oh. It's all-inclusive, whatever the letter is.
Okay. Well, but a lot of them are all-inclusive without drugs, and some of them are with drugs. Short answer is if you have the one with drugs, you can keep it. You probably don't want to. You'll probably want to get a different one. You could get, in fact, the same Medigap plan without the drugs. You'll spend less, and then you could join a Part D plan. But there are some people who do have that Medigap plan with drugs. No Medigap insurer will be allowed to offer new plans with drugs or offer their plans with drugs to new people. But the people who are in those plans now may stay with them if they want. They will, however, have to pay a late enrollment penalty if they switch later.
Okay.
I think maybe you've misunderstood or I've not explained it correctly. My wife has to pay for her own drugs out of pocket. It's only the doctors and the hospital that she can ride free.
Tricia, did you have a...
It's possible that your wife has a Medigap policy that doesn't pay for any prescription drugs.
That's right.
And if that's the case, then she can keep that policy next year. She may also want to think about signing up for a Medicare prescription drug plan. So then she would have regular Medicare. her Medigap policy that seems to be working for her, and also a Medicare drug plan.
All right, John, well, I just...
You have now answered my question.
Okay, great. I'm glad we did. Thanks so much, John. Tricia, maybe you can explain to us, where is it that seniors or anybody who's eligible for this plan can go to on the web to get the answer to some of these questions?
They can start, I guess I should say the majority of seniors don't go online. So when you think about going to the web, I think it's 76% of seniors have never gone online. But those that do, or those who have family members or friends who will go online for them, can go to www.medicare.gov to get much of this information. Beyond online resources, they can call 1-800-MEDICARE. And also, in each state, there are state health insurance programs that provide assistance to people, and their state telephone numbers are listed in the Medicare New Handbook.
And Kaiser has actually studied how much seniors are using the Internet, and particularly with relation to this program, and it's a small number.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was important to say. I mean, that might be a great tool for future generations of seniors, but for the current generation, it's probably not going to help most people.
All right, here's an email from Mark in Holland, Michigan. I'm a boomer helping my 80-year-old plus parents navigate this new plan. So I guess a lot of boomers are going to the web for their parents. I've attended seminars, read a bunch, and obviously I'm listening intently today. The good news for them is they are paying over $3,000 in drugs. Currently, they have no benefit at all. My mom takes most of the medications. My question is, can my dad have a cheap plan and my mom a different one, and can each choose the plans that cover their particular drugs best?
Yes.
Julie.
That's how Medicare works, too. Medicare doesn't go by couple. Some of these income requirements for help go by, they'll look at you as a couple. But no, everybody is individual, is eligible for their own individual policies, so they can indeed be in different plans.
And here's a question from Rick in Phoenix, Arizona. You say you could change your provider from a cheaper plan when you don't really need much coverage to a more full plan the next enrollment period if you find yourself in need of greater coverage. If in the meantime you have developed a condition that necessitates the greater coverage, can the new provider raise those rates or deny you coverage based on pre-existing conditions?
Well, the answer to the last question is no. You cannot be denied a Medicare prescription drug plan based on your medical history. And I think another issue that was maybe implied by the questioner was whether or not rates could be raised over the course of the year. And the answer to that is no. The rates are across the whole group and not they don't vary by individual.
All right, let's see if we can get one more question in here from a caller, Conrad in South Carolina. Go ahead, Conrad.
Yes, I've been listening to your program, and I'm curious. I just want to verify. I'm retired military, and I'm on TRICARE for Life. Do I need to participate in this program?
Julie?
No.
And actually, I think TRICARE should have sent a letter to that effect, too. I think it's important to say that a lot of these, if you have retiree health coverage, you will be getting a letter from your provider that tells you whether or not the plan is equal to the Medicare benefit. And if it is, then the retiree plan actually gets a subsidy from the government, although I'm not sure the military plan does, but private ones do. So they have an interest in telling you that it's okay and that you can stay on it, because then they'll get some extra money for the government.
All right. Thanks for your call, Conrad. And Julie, just one other question. We were saying earlier that I think there's a target of 30 million people by a certain date in 2006. They're hoping to enroll in this. Any sense that that's going to happen? And if it doesn't happen, what does that say? Is this program a failure? Do they have to start all over again from scratch? Or
well, given that today is the first day of enrollment, it's hard to predict how many they're going to get. Certainly,
I'm just wondering, with all the concerns we've heard about confusion and complication, is it really going to keep people from signing up?
The big concern, I think, particularly for the plans that are offering them, are that the healthier people aren't going to bother and the sicker people will. And that could be a real problem in terms of being able to, not lose money on this benefit. So I think that's the worry, is will they get enough people, will they get enough healthy people to make it a viable insurance product?
And what about the people who need it most, apart from the healthy versus sick? What about those who have the greatest concern in terms of their income? Are they going to, Trish?
you know, it's early at this point. And overall, in our survey, only 1 in 5 people on Medicare say they plan to sign up. Even among those who don't have any drug coverage, 28% say they're going to sign up. So it's early, and hopefully all the education and outreach efforts will reach people to encourage them to look seriously into signing up. As for low-income subsidy assistance, the Social Security Administration has sent out something like 18 million applications. But programs that serve low-income people have historically suffered from low participation rates. And this is a case where getting this help really makes a difference in terms of getting the value out of the drug benefit.
So people on Medicaid have to join this plan, is that right? Or
well, they actually are a special group of people. In some respects, they're treated differently in that they will lose their Medicaid drug coverage at the end of 2005, and they are being randomly assigned to Medicare drug plans so that, in theory, they will have coverage on day one in January of 2006. And there is some concern that there could be a gap in coverage, and many are worried, I think it's fair to say, that there could be gaps in coverage in the transition for people from Medicaid to these Medicare drug plans.
But I think it's fair to say that if you don't have any drug coverage now, there's no question that this will be a benefit. I mean, that it's, I think,
complicated as it may be.
Complicated as it may be, the government's putting a lot of money into this, and you will be better off with it than without it if you don't have any coverage now. The question is, if you do have coverage now, or if you have some coverage now, whether, you know, exactly how much it will help you, and then sorting out all of the various options.
So it's worth it for people to wade through this information and really try and figure out what the best thing is for them to do.
Yes.
And you would agree with that?
I would absolutely
Trish.
Agree with that. I mean, there are real benefits for many people with low incomes. There's the catastrophic benefit, which will help people if they have an unexpected or an expected expensive illness, which requires a lot of prescriptions. And then there's the people in the middle who just could benefit from having the insurance coverage that's made available and is subsidized by the government.
So people who've been listening to this program, hearing about all the complications, shouldn't be afraid of this. They should, because, you know, there's on one level, a lot of the coverage I've been hearing has made me think, oh boy, I don't know that I'd want to have to do that.
You know, well, in fairness, I don't know that they should be afraid, but it's tough stuff, and they might need some extra help, some counseling, some one-on-one support to work through these decisions about whether to sign up and which plan to get. But I think we're all agreeing that the work may be worth it in terms of the coverage they get.
And they don't have to do it today, just because today it's not a line. It's not, you don't get a benefit for signing up first. So you can take your time. I mean, this is one of the things that Medicare officials keep saying. As long as you sign up by the end of December, you'll get the benefit as soon as it starts. So basically, you've got 6 weeks to really try and sort this through. And then you've got another, you know, till the middle of May to decide if you want to do it at all without paying a penalty.
All right. Thanks so much to both of you for being with us. Julie Rovner is NPR's health policy correspondent, and Tricia Newman is the vice president at Kaiser Family Foundation and director of their Medicare Policy Project. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.